At this time, the conference is being recorded. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect. I'd like to turn the conference to your speakers. You may begin.
Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call on Tuesday, the 8th of September, we have Tatiana Kromtsova, Siva Mutusami, Barry Cobb, Sergei Gorbunov, Jeffrey Eckhaus, Michael Palage, James Bledel, Paul Diaz, Ted Suzuki, Alan Greenberg, Cheryl Langdon Orr. Latecomers, we will have Elaine Doolin and Phil Corwin. And apologies, we have William McKellicott, Karim Atumani, Michaeli Nalon, Tim Ruiz, Mason Cole, Mike O'Connor. On today's call from staff, we have, apologies for that, Margie Milam, Marika Konings, Len de Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. I can also just say that Karim Atumani will be absent on all future calls. He's just had a baby. His wife's just had a baby. He does not have a connection at home, but he does read the transcripts. And if you could all please state your names when you talk, and this will be for transcript purposes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gisela. I'm just about ready. All right. The first item on our agenda is the update from the data gathering group. We had one meeting last week, and I think a very productive meeting, trying to decide from the starting with the list of questions that Mike Palage had put together, which ones were relevant, which ones were not, trying to understand the issues. Following that, Marika and I did some revision of it. The revision is not very changed in intent, but the format is changed considerably in that we try to put more specific questions to either the person doing the survey or to the registrar instead of an open-ended descriptive request for what happens at expiration time. It's not clear, of course, that the items that we've listed are the only ones relevant, and some of them may not be relevant from some people's point of view. But I'd like to start by going over what we presented and take a first cut at is it close to what we want. Now, there's a fair number of people who are not on the call today, so I think we do not want to come to closure on this, but a discussion of the people who are here I think will be relevant and help us get closer to a good format. Any general comments before we start going over the specifics?
Yep. Let's go.
Okay. The first two questions in the original survey were very open-ended ones and specifically said, what happens if the registrant says, I don't want the domain anymore, and what happens if they don't say anything? First of all, we've inverted the order of the two because the second one is, we believe, the far more common one. That is, when the registrant is silent and the registrar decides it is implicitly being, or it is implicitly expiring. I tried to identify a number of critical points along the process and to understand what happens from a registrant's point of view. The questions that we did, I'm going to go over them slowly, but anyone yell out if you want to discuss one in any substance. The first one is, does the registrar allow the domain name to auto-renew in those registries that employ the policy? Our general belief is most registrars do avail themselves of this, but there is a cash flow issue, and we would like to make sure that indeed the bulk of registrars do follow that process. There is an issue of notices to the registrant. We know there are certain notices which are mandated by the RAA. We also understand that there are that certain registrars may go over and above that, may use different processes. So essentially we're asking what kind of notices go out and who sends them. Any questions, comments? The second one is, the first one was referring, the second bullet rather was referring to what happens prior to expiration. The second one is after expiration, since again we have reports from some registrars that they continue to try to get hold of the registrant after the formal expiration. The next point, the fourth bullet, talks about what happens to who is. In other words, other than the expiration date changing, if in the case of auto renew, or in the flag of a domain, are there substantive changes? And of course, the one we're most interested in, but not necessarily only, are the changes that relate to saying who the registrant is. Everyone happy so far?
Mm-hmm.
The next one is goes into the cost issue, and we decided at the last meeting not to try to ask questions about cost in absolute numbers, but to try to understand what happens, what kind of cost the registrant sees if they try to reclaim the domain name at various times after the formal expiration. Specifically, how variable is it? How well is it documented? What are the parameters that cause it to vary, if indeed it does vary? The next point is one that we hadn't discussed before, but I believe is very relevant.
Alan,
yes,
Alan, this is James. I have my hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm focusing on the lower right of the screen, not the upper left. Yes, go ahead, James.
Okay, just briefly, we maybe didn't touch on this when we were going through these questions before, but if the cost is significantly different in different periods, do we want to give registrars opportunities to at least explain their rationale for a different cost? I'm afraid that if we leave it open-ended and just say cost is X in this period and Y in this period, we might want to ensure that we're providing opportunity to quantify why that would be.
I have absolutely no problem with that.
Yeah, this is Mike Palage. James, I think that's reasonable and consistent with trying to get the registrars to give as much information as possible.
Of course, it's voluntary if they would like to submit a door to door.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can't get...
give the opportunity not to close the door.
I can't imagine anyone objecting to that, but I certainly don't. So essentially, give them an opportunity to give more detailed information and a rationale if they choose.
Yeah. This is Marika. I have a question, because don't we allow for that in bullet 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, where we basically ask them to, if the cost is different, does it vary, or is it the same for every period? If so, what does this variance depend on? For example, given time of renewal, estimated value of domain. So I guess there would be an opportunity to specify why there is a difference.
No, this is James. I think that cost, we're being, we're saying cost, we mean price, and we're saying cost, we mean cost. What is the burden to the registrar? Is the burden to the registrar different in those different periods? Is kind of what I'm pointed at. So, if that makes sense.
So, could we maybe then add as an example? Is there more cost to the registrar to recover the domain in that period? To add it as well as one of the options there.
You mean registrar?
Yes.
Yeah, to the registrar.
I guess if we're asking them to talk about their rationale for doing it, I'd like to leave it a little bit more open-ended than just their costs.
No, my idea was just as an example to more say, like, well, there can be a variance in cost because it's, the registrar has just decided that because if it's a different time, it costs more, or it might be because the registrar has identified that there are more costs involved for him to do it, or it is because the domain is assessed as more valuable. So just to give them an idea of what kind of elements they might think of as to explanations for that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was my intention, not to limit to what they can provide as information, but just as examples.
I certainly have no problem with that then. No other hands up? No one else shrieking? Okay. The next number of questions have to do with what is the impact of the expiration, both what is the impact and when does it happen? Specifically, at what point does the domain name stop resolving to the original registrant's website? Where does it go at that point? And what happens with email in that same time period?
This is Marika.
That covers about four of the different bullets, but that's essentially the substance. Marika and then Ron?
Yeah, I actually had a question for some of the registrars on the call, just to know, like, are these procedures automated? So would normally the answer to these kind of questions be, like, it's always the same for every domain name that expires?
It's Jeff here. I don't mind answering, and the answer is yes. These are automatic things that are done from a database, so everything is automated on these. Like, on a certain date, this gets sent out. Pre-expiration, there are ones post-expiration, depending if the customer has auto-renew on, set auto-renew to off. So, yes, but those are all automated.
Okay, thanks.
And
this is James. They are at GoDaddy as well. I'm supporting what Jeff said.
And I'll just add, to the extent that some registrars may have them vary depending on some differences, they can certainly identify that. Ron?
Yeah, I'd like to bring up the point on when DNS is changed in the root servers, the email, you know, all the MX records all happens all at the same time. So if the web, there's no way that a registrar who's not a hosting company, not hosting the, if you're not dealing with a hosting company that's hosting the web and hosting the mail service, then there's no way for that registrar to do anything other than to cut the whole domain off. So in some senses, those questions don't quite make sense.
My understanding is if there's an MX record which is not changed, it would still stay in effect.
No, because the name, what gets changed in the root servers, see, the zone is controlled by the name servers that the root servers point to. So, yes, if the registrar is handling the DNS, that would be the case, but not in the general case of where you may register the domain name with, for example, Network Solutions, but have it hosted by some other company who is doing or hosting it yourself if you're a business.
There's no question. You're correct. If the DNS is not hosted by the registrar, if the DNS is not controlled by the registrar,
right,
then everything changes.
Right. And
if
that
it is on the registrar's registrar, then they do have the ability of just changing one and not the other if there are.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that in fact, is very often the case with web hosting companies and things like that.
Uh-huh.
James, did you have your hand up from before, or?
No, this is something new, Alan.
Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to talk about the page here where it says something about a PPC or similar page, and doesn't say that the registration has expired. And I don't know if. Both questions, I feel like they're starting to dig deeply into the construction of what an alert page looks like, which certainly is going to vary not only between registrars, but also possibly within a registrar. So I'm wondering if we can just leave that a little more open-ended without specifying, you know, just say, you know, if it redirects, what does that page look like? And just kind of leave it question mark at that, as opposed to asking, you know, what's on that page and what does it say and how does it, you know,
I don't mind, although I know some people will object, but I don't mind leaving off the pay-per-click issue. I think asking the question directly of does the page that you get say anything about what the original registrant should do to get it back, because I think that has been identified as one of the differences and has been identified as one of the crucial things to be able, allowing them to reclaim it quickly. Now, the answer may be some of our pages we do this way, some we do another way, and that's fair game.
This is Mike Palage, if I could get in the queue.
Sure, Mike. Ron, did you have your hand up from before, or are you in this queue?
Yeah, that was from before.
Okay. Mike, go ahead.
I guess the only reason that, as far as a pay-per-click, that I think is potentially relevant is in looking at the registrant. When that registrar begins to put up, if you will, advertisements associated with that domain, that may have legal significance because those pay-per-clicks, the registrant may have originally been using the domain in a, shall we say, a lawful manner, non-infringing. But there are potential trademark issues that may arise where the pay-per-clicks, you know, may be associated with particular goods and services associated with a trademark holder that the registrar's algorithms put up. And that potentially has consequences because, again, at the end of the day, this domain name is still appearing in the whois, I think, in the name of the registrant.
We haven't decided that yet.
Not necessarily. It depends. We've asked the previous question of when does that change? When does who is change if it does? So we don't know in any given case whether it's still in the name of the registrant or not.
Well, what we have seen, and that's one of the benefits of the email that Christina Rosette said, is there we do have, again, we're looking for proof. So we have one factual scenario where, you know, it disappeared from the registrant's dashboard, so to speak, but the whois information was still associated with that individual with content that the original registrant was not aware of. So, this goes back to openness, transparency, and predictability. I think that registrants should have some degree of predictability that when they are no longer using the name or, you know, they're done with it, someone else should not be using it in their name, potentially causing them harm.
I don't think I'm going to disagree with you that might be an outcome of this PDP. To be honest, I don't think we need to ask whether registrars put up pay-per-click pages. We know most of them do.
Well, so, then how about don't you use pay-per-clicks? If you're saying that they
do... what we're really not using this survey to try to find the good guys versus the bad guys in whatever definition we have of those words. For this particular question, to be honest, it's almost a no-brainer. We know what the answer is. I was asking it to be complete. I'm not adamant about it, is all I was saying. How do the registrars feel about asking this question?
It's Jeff. I have my hand up, so I just want a few comments. I think I agree with James on the point saying does a pay-per-click, I don't know what having that on there, what that has to do with this, with the whole point of the working group or PDP. I think it's just saying, I think the proper question would just be, does the original website still resolve, or is it something, or I think you could just say something else, because I think, Alan, one of the assumptions you're making, and I understand how you're making that assumption, but it's not always true, is stating that having instructions on how to renew or having something on there does not always lead to, let's call it a higher renewal rate or a higher instance of the original registrant coming back and renewing that domain. That was just an assumption that you're making that I was going to say. It's an assumption. It hasn't been a proven fact stating that putting that on there will make a difference. But I think just saying, is the original website up there or is it something else? Because what's up there now is you could have multiple choice saying, hey, they do point to a pay-per-click. They point to something with instructions. It doesn't resolve anymore. But I think that would be the question is saying, is it the original or something else?
Well, I'll disagree with you on that. I think having instructions there, having a statement there to any visitor saying this registration has expired. The RAE can renew it by doing such and such. Sends a message that they haven't gotten the wrong address. The problem is expiration. They can then try to alert the original registrant of the issue, and the original registrant knows who to contact. One of the comments that people have made is when this happens, they don't know how to get hold of their registrar.
Right, and I can't go into it much further because it would be proprietary information, but I'll just say that in practice and in using huge amounts of data to test that has not been proven out. But I'll just leave it at that.
I don't think there's anything wrong with asking the question. What we end up recommending in the end may well be different.
Oh, no. I don't disagree. Asking the question is fine.
Okay.
I just think, but the question would be, is it the original site or something else? Not, is it a pay-per-click page?
Yeah, and I think, this is James, and I think Jeff makes an excellent point. I mean, we should be asking questions in such a way that doesn't presume the response. That's all.
But we
that
want
really
to be
relevant.
Able to evaluate. I mean, at least one registrar has said they put up instructions on how to get the page back. And, you know, they viewed that as something they were doing to help the registrant. So I think it's fair game to ask. Sorry, go ahead.
Could a compromise be saying, like, asking, I mean, is it the original page or something else? And if the registrar answers it's something else, can you please specify, is it a pay-per-click site or, you know, all that?
That's where I was going. That's exactly what I was going towards, Marika.
Mike Pelage, I think that's a fair compromise. And, again, it's within the sort of allow staff to engage in a dialogue with the survey and registrars to get the information instead of an interrogation.
Marika will revise it according to that. And as I said, I don't think we're going to come to closure today, so we'll do a second pass on this at that point. All right. Questions about email? Were there any further questions about that?
Only from the point of view of asking, this is Ron Wickersham, of the notice should come from the same email address that the registrar normally sends out. I know of one case where the mail came from a different email address, so the registrant thought that it was phishing for a renewal. It wasn't because it wasn't from the email address that they normally expected mail from.
That's a good point. The items in the list right now are talking about email directed at the domain name, but you raise a very good point. So I'd like to come back to that one in a few minutes if we can.
Okay.
Mm. Essentially, what these questions are asking is someone else intercepting email and potentially reading it. Do the senders get a bounce message? Does it go into a black hole? What happens? Okay, the next one
Alan, this is James. My hand up.
Go ahead, James.
Yeah, I just wanted to...
I don't always look up in that corner, so just yell out if I don't notice you.
Okay, will do. No problem, and I'll try to be...
Chair. That was Cheryl, sorry.
Cheryl, I didn't hear you.
We'll just have to retrain you, Chair, that's all.
Many people have tried, I think, is the answer.
Just very quickly, with regard to notification emails, I don't know if there's any value in discussing whether or not a registrar screens to check to see whether or not the renewal notifications or expiry notifications are going to the same email domain that is affected by the expiration, if that makes sense.
If there are notices after expiration, and do they check that, or after they have changed deactivated email delivery?
Right. So if I'm,
I think that's irrelevant.
If I'm sending a notification in regards to somedomain.com, then I shouldn't be sending those notifications to an email address within that same domain. So it's a self-referential self-referencing email address.
So we already have a question saying when email stops going to the RAE, what happens? And we could ask an extra question at that point saying, if you send any expiration notices, do you check to see if it's going to an address in that situation?
Okay.
That's a good point. Thank you. All right. Next we come into the biggie of at what point, if any, is the name offered for sale, auction, or transfer? Should we be asking how long that process takes if it's an auction or sale?
Alan, this is James.
Yeah.
I'd like to propose a different wording for this in a way I think that will kind of encompass what we're intending to get after, but it will also leave it somewhat more open-ended. It's just something to the effect of at what point, if any, is the expired name made available to other registrants within that registrar? And let's see if I'm making this any sense here. What point is it made available to others? Because I think we can take in auctions, we can take in transfers, sales, we can take in backordering systems. We can take in all those types of different products and they may have differing implementation windows if we were to say something like, at what point is this made available to others?
And what point is it finalized or something like that? I don't know the right words. I certainly consider what you're suggesting a friendly amendment, but do we want to explicitly ask what the window was you were just referred to as a point to this, as opposed to the starting point?
Not sure how to work that in there without...
Marika, if you can, did you capture what he said?
I think so. My only question would be, if you say others, do that mean as well the registrar itself, or would that have to be made explicit?
I'm stumbling over this one a little bit. I'm going to ask if any of the other registrars would like to take a stab at this. But I think that if we get into an exercise where we're enumerating the different mechanisms by which a name can be dispositioned, I think that that's just kind of a rabbit hole. I was thinking if you could just the key concept is you want to get, is this available to others?
Others other than the RAE, right? You're saying
right,
could include the registrar's own account.
Yeah, other parties. As opposed to the RAE, and then, you know, because some of those could be instantaneous, and some of them, like you mentioned, could have a process.
So if we say to anyone or anybody, whatever, other than the RAE, that covers the whole range of options. And then I think Marika, if you can just put in brackets window question, and we'll come back to it and try to come up with some better words when we have everyone on the call to encompass the concept of windows where they apply.
Okay, I mean...
Unless you come up with a brilliant idea yourself in the interim.
Well, the alternative might be, of course, to put in the brackets some of the examples that I mentioned here. Example, sale, auction, or transfer, so that people know as well what you're talking about. I mean, the window question that was raised, you know, and that's, again, a question for the registrars. I don't know, for example, with auctions, is there a set time frame, or sometimes, you know, the auction just runs until someone buys it, or doesn't it depend as well if there are minimum or maximum prices set, or I don't know if there's a one answer to that.
It can't run forever because there's a 45-day period that the registrar has to do something with or delete it.
But within that window, does the same apply to all, or it's...
Well, I
guess that's something that might come out of the research.
Yeah, I think in almost any question we ask, any given registrar can have four different business models, that they apply to different parts of their business. So I suspect any of our questions we're asking can have that kind of answer, that it varies. Okay, let's try to draft something, and we'll go through another iteration on it. The next one is, if a reseller was involved in the original transaction, doesn't look right. One second. Ah, it should be wants to reclaim, not wasn't to reclaim. Okay, so if a reseller is involved in the original transaction and the RAE wants to reclaim a domain name after expiration, does the RAE deal with the registrar or reseller? Is that a reasonable question? The reason I'm asking it is, people have said that in some cases the registrar handles all transactions at that point, and in other cases the arrangement between the reseller and registrar is that the registrar is invisible and everything happens with the reseller. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm thinking about this one. This is James. I'm trying to think of, okay, let's invert the question. Is there a way for the RAE to reclaim the name by working directly with the registrar?
If they know who the registrar is.
Sure.
In some cases, that's not a non-trivial issue.
This is Ron. Is that hidden in Who Is? It seems to me that
no, it's available in the Who Is.
No,
in the new RAA, it's required to disclose it.
Right.
If they're questioned.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to think of a way that could even, I don't know, I know how our system works, but I think that would probably vary considerably between registrars.
The real question is, for a non-sophisticated user who doesn't even know about Who Is, how do they find out who they're supposed to be dealing with? Now, if it is the reseller that they always dealt with, then at least they should have had their information on file somewhere.
Wait a second. I think that's a different question than what we're looking at right here, Alan. I apologize. But the question here says, if the reseller was involved in the original transaction and the RAE wants to reclaim the name, does it deal with the registrar or the reseller?
Right.
Am I understanding this? I'm trying to answer this question. I'm trying to invert it, which is there even a way for an RAE, knowing who the parent registrar is there a way for them to work with them directly to reclaim a name after expiration? And that's what I'm struggling with. So it's not about disclosure of that parent registrar. I mean, this question presumes that the RAE knows that there is a parent registrar and knows which one it is.
Well, if the answer is they have to deal with the registrar, then we come up. Then the obvious next question would be, how do I find out who the registrar is? On the other hand, the model that may be used in general is you keep on dealing with the reseller. They're the interface to the registrant. And we're trying to find out, what does the registrant normally see in this circumstance? Is there a reason we need to invert it?
Well, I'm trying to think of a way that we could, for example, combine a couple of these questions that are on the table, whether or not they're implied within this sentence or not, and say something to the effect of, if there's a reseller involved in the transaction and the RAE wants to reclaim the domain name after expiration, one, how do they determine that they're dealing with a reseller rather than a registrar? Two, how do they understand which registrar is affiliated with that particular reseller? And three, must they work through that reseller to reclaim the expired name, or can they work directly with the parent registrar? So I mean, I know I'm going kind of fast here, but I think those are the three questions we're trying to uncover with this sentence. Sorry.
This is Ron chipping in on a slightly related but slightly different topic. Is when the effective expiration, you know, where DNS is modified, happens, then the registrant wants to get it done as fast as possible. So if he's dealing with a reseller who has limited office hours and no automated systems, he would like to work directly with a registrar and get it renewed immediately.
I have no problem with that, but you're presuming that the registrar wants to talk to this person.
I think in most cases they don't.
Well, I know in some cases they don't, and they say so-and-so sold you the domain, you go back to them.
Right.
And that's what I was trying to get out of the original question.
Okay.
There may be some registrars who say expiration, the microsecond of expiration, the registrar is the only party in control. In other cases, we may still find that the registrar may be in control, but they don't want to deal with the registrant, and it's a reseller issue. And there may be some cases where it's either or.
Yeah, it would be excellent to get that clarified then, because that seems very murky as you express it.
And then,
hey, it's Jeff here. I just have one comment. I think that one of the points that I'm listening to these questions, and I think that we're not going to have the answers. I know you're saying we'd like to get things clarified or see, but there's going to be, I mean, if you ask most of the registrars, and you'll see there's some of them will say in some cases it's the reseller, in some cases it's the registrar, or, you know, sometimes you get to choose. I'm not sure there's no, you know, clearing up. There's different models and different pieces. I'm not sure what the answer is that we're looking for here, because I would say that in some cases it's the reseller, some cases it's the registrar. Does that help us move ahead on this anywhere? I'm just trying to figure out where we're going with these questions.
Yes, I think it does, because in discussions leading up to this with some registrars, I have been told that their business model is they deal with everything from the microsecond of expiration on. Resellers are not involved. And they believe all registrars do that.
May I? Hello, can you hear
yes.
me? This is Shiva.
Yes, just one moment. So the question was aimed at putting on the table the fact that the models vary.
I agree with you 100%.
And that I think is what we're trying to find out here, that there is a whole range of models, and we cannot presume, as this person I was talking to said, that all registrars do the following.
Alan, I'm in 100% agreement with you. So
okay.
Is that something, are we looking to further get past this, or just to, I guess I won't say prove the point, but just to second it that it does vary?
Yeah, and we're trying to end up with some data that I believe that the reason I put that there, and I did add that particular one, was to demonstrate that the situation does vary, and it's not one flavor fits all.
Okay. Oh, no, I agree with you. I just wanted to see that's what we were trying to get to, just for you to get the data point saying it does vary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Siva, you had a question or a comment?
Yeah, I have a comment, and basically it relates to the separation of registrars from resellers, and there has been quite a lot of talk about resellers doing something for which the registrar says it's done by the reseller. And now on this question of reseller saying that he's not able to get to the a registrar saying that he has a different model, and by his model he does not get to the registrant details, and it has to be dealt by the reseller himself. I think this cannot be right, and ultimately the registrar is responsible for the domain name, and he is accountable no matter he deals with one reseller or 3,000 retailers, whether he has systems in place or does not have systems in place. The responsibility of all these issues rests with the registrar, and the registrar has an agreement with ICANN, and whatever agreement that the registrar has with ICANN has to be passed on to the reseller, and it's the responsibility of the registrar to make sure that he maintains control over resellers.
And we may find that some outcome of this PDP sets some rules for how this relationship works. Right now, we're just trying to do information discovery and find out what the situation is today.
Yeah, this is Ron again. Wondering on some of these, and this particular question, if a multiple choice answer, being the specific response you're looking for, wouldn't be better than the open-ended essay question.
I thought this was a multiple choice. As originally worded, it was a multiple choice.
Okay.
Who do they deal with? Why don't you, if you have a suggestion for rewording it, since we have a number of different people coming up with them, why don't we do that on the list?
Okay.
And try to come up with something better. Okay, the next question is related to that, assuming that we've determined who it is you're dealing with. The question is, how do they typically deal with you? Is it a web form? Is it email? Is it a telephone? Again, we know there are some resellers that don't have telephone numbers. So we're trying to understand what's the registrant experience at this point in time. And again, as someone pointed out, if your domain that is critical to your business just stopped working, time is of essence. The last point is essentially saying under what conditions do things fall all the way through and it goes into the RGP. No hands, no comments. I'm going to come back at the end and say, are there other things that we've missed altogether? I suspect there are. But let's go on now to question number two, which essentially is the same as the previous one. It's saying, what happens if the registrant has explicitly said they intend not to renew? Do you follow the same process as above? Or if so, tell us where the differences are.
Yep, fair enough.
Now, related to that is the comment Christina made. And Christina and I had a relatively extensive discussion offline afterwards. And one of the questions I put to her was, does she believe that a cancellation in midterm essentially brings to the present expiration, or is it a different situation than before? And I guess I'd like to have this group discuss that a little bit. So are the things we're talking about at expiration, do they apply if someone midway through the term says, I want to cancel, and the registrar says, yes, we are canceling? Do we consider the expiration terms to be applicable at this time, or is it a completely separate process?
Alan, it's Jeff. Can I just ask a question? Because I'm missing parts of the conversation. So just to clarify, so you're saying, if you're the registrant and you go to the registrar and you say, I want to cancel this name immediately.
Right.
And then you're not asking the registrar explicitly to delete it at that time. You're just saying, I don't want to even manage this. I don't want anything to do with it. Remove it from my account. I don't care if there's time left. Or you're saying, I want to cancel it. I want to delete it. I don't want to own it anymore.
I suspect to someone who is relatively naive, their two are synonymous. So I don't want to try to put meaning into the
intent of the person. Just to tell you that I don't know how many years that I've been on the registrar side, the only times that has really come up has been from more sophisticated users who say, I want it deleted right now, versus anybody that's called and said, I'd like to cancel it, I don't want it anymore, I don't want to have to deal with it. That's why I'm just curious, what was the sort of background around it, because it seems very, very rare or a fringe case that I've never even seen that happen. That's why I'm just curious how that came about, that question.
The particular case that Christina mentioned, I won't try to say what the intent was, but what the result was the registrar took it out of the control of the registrant, but left the whois information pointing to them, and left the website pointing to the original website. So everything remained the same, except the registrant no longer had any control over it. And since this happened to be an intellectual property infringement issue, you know, the registrant was presented with a cease and desist order where they couldn't do anything about it, but they were still the registrant of record.
Okay.
So a rather unusual set of circumstances.
Right. And also, I think that, you know, just my point is just to keep us sort of focused on that, why I don't think that that really, that, why that would apply here, because our whole, the process is the post-expiration domain name recovery. So that's why I want to say it's a fringe case. It doesn't really apply, and I want to know if we could just pass on that. And
well,
no,
but
I was asking for my opinion.
This is Pelage, if I can
we got a couple of people lined up. That's why I was asking the question, do we consider this an early expiration because it was canceled, or is it a completely separate process? And it's not within our domain.
Oh, yeah, and now it's just expressing my opinion, the answer to the question, that I think it's completely separate. So but that's, as I said, my opinion and my thought.
Okay, gotcha. Michael?
Well, I would have to disagree. And what happens is we're looking, and let me explain why. The customer, the registrant said cancel the name. It wanted it canceled. Now, what happens is, from a predictability, once a name is canceled, there should be a set of sequence that registrant can rely upon either to A, get it back if he changed his mind, or B, know that it will be reallocated or put back into the available pool. Now, the reason I guess what I find somewhat interesting here is, you know, the registrars are like, oh, we don't have any facts, we're trying to get facts. We have a situation here that goes to the clear mens rea of how some people are treating these domain names like their own chattel. Oh, it's not theirs anymore. So I do think it goes to the state of mind of how some resellers / registrars are treating this, and goes to the broader issue. So I don't think it's a one-off. I think it is relevant. And I would argue that, you know, it's not just a fringe case that should be thrown away. It is documented proof of how bad things happen when registrars do not keep accurate information with names that are intended to be expired. Or in this case, I think according to Christina, the name actually did expire. So whether the person intended it to or not, it went into the expiry date. And again, I'll go back and I'll double check that. But
no, that is not the case. It did not expire, unless your definition of expire is what happens immediately after cancellation, and that was the question I was asking.
So then here's the question, though, that needs to be asked, is let's go back to the registrant contract, right? So when a registrar sponsors a name with a registry, they do that on behalf of a customer, right? So they're doing that on behalf of a customer, and they receive payment. Now, when that customer says they no longer want that contractual right to exist, on what basis is a registrar stepping into those contractual rights to continue to maintain a domain name at a registry?
Michael,
that is the issue here, Alan, and it's a very important
question. Your question is noted. I'd like to go on to the other speakers. Tatiana?
Yeah, but I think that it's one part of life cycle with the domain name, and it's a useful question, I think, because, for example, if a registrant would like to cancel the domain name, others, for example, our clients asking us, can I register this domain name and why it is, for example, a redemption period. It's a part of the domain life cycle, so it would be useful to ask registrars about it.
Okay. James?
Yeah, and just real quickly, I think I'd also like to express the opinion that it may be related, but it may be a separate topic. You know, and to respond to, I think, what Mike was mentioning, is that, you know, there are two sides to either coin there. If the registrar does not maintain control over a name for a period of time, then we'll have an equal number of anecdotal problems where registrars were saying, I tried to get this name back and my registrar said they couldn't help me. Okay? By maintaining control of a name for a certain period of time, we provide a safety net or an undo opportunity for some of these what would otherwise be irrevocable type of decisions. So I think, you know, we have to be very, very careful when we say we want registrars to do X or do Y, because we want to make sure that we don't inadvertently create a whole new slew of problems for registrants who have lost control of their domain and are looking for their registrar to help them get it back.
I think your point is well taken in that whatever we come up with, if we come up with something, is likely to help some people and perhaps hurt others. The situation of someone saying, I don't need this anymore, is different, surely, from the situation, which may be the case here, where the person realizes they have a lawsuit coming at them if they don't make this domain name disappear. And we don't necessarily have ways to differentiate.
But it's not the registrar's place to judge which one is which. We should essentially say, you know, we're trying to build a one-size-fits-all process, and,
yep,
and we just need to recognize that not everybody comes to that transaction with the same intention.
Understood. Paul?
So, Alan, this is Mike.
Yeah, Mike, let Paul get in first, then we'll
okay,
go back to you.
Okay, just put me at the end.
Yep.
Sure, Alan, and Mike pulled together a lot of what we've just been hearing. I mean, I guess for all of us, it's a couple issues are very, very important. We've had discussion about what different people think was the intent behind question two. I mean, I'm just looking at question two. We're certainly going to have to reword this because, you know, asking the intention is not to renew, and then we're getting people jump in with, I'm sorry, Mike, but I think it is a fringe case. I can't really remember the last time I heard somebody in the middle of a registration term asking for a name to be canceled and purged from the systems. That's exceptionally rare. But, you know, if we still want to look into it, if we do have this situation that Christina's talked about, let's just make sure that the question clearly gets to what we're trying to figure out here. Because, I mean, I'm looking at all these questions and just trying to be objective as a registrar. I mean, a lot of them I'm really at a loss. Wait a minute. If the mandate of this group is post-expiration, some of these questions just seem to be taking us in different directions.
Okay.
I'm not sure what we're going to do with answers, if you even get them. You know, a lot of them seem to be putting registrars almost like on a defensive because they seem to be getting at, you know, business practices and things. If we want clarification on what happens in terms of process and policies, let's just make sure that our questions are tightly worded. And this particular one, I mean, look how long we've been going over it, and yet I'm not at all clear on what was the original case that even motivated this thing, and whatever it was, let's get the details straight so that we can make the question.
Just a point of clarification, you're talking about the one that is number two.
Yeah, the big number two, right, not the bullets, but the number now.
Okay. I don't believe we've been talking about number two. We've been talking about an issue that Christina Rosette raised, which may or may not be within our domain, but it certainly is not what was discussed in question two.
Okay, then that helps because I've heard others weighing in and it sounded like they were trying to impart something in two that I don't see there.
Yeah. What she described is question two, if you come up with a new definition which you may or may not believe is reasonable, that if a registrant requests in midstream to cancel a registration, do we deem that to be expiration? If the answer is yes, then what we're talking about in Christina's case is number two. If the answer is no, then Christina's case doesn't fall within our domain at all.
And, you know, for the record, Alan, that's perfectly stated, and let's get that down on paper so that two becomes an AB.
But at this point, we were not covering Christina's case. I was asking the question of should we widen these questions to cover it, if we believe that that ad hoc definition I just came up with is applicable.
Then just for the group as a whole, let's just be careful that, you know, widening also, we have a charter, we have a mandate here, and that we stay within it, not that we start, you know, kind of expanding midstream to get into issues business cases in particular that are kind of beyond the original intent of the working group.
Anyone else want to weigh in on this?
Do I get to go now, Alan?
Yes, sir.
Okay. A couple of rebuttal points. We're fact-finding here. I understand what the mandate of the charter is. I've read it. But what we need to do is, this is kind of not unlike litigation, where in discovery you sit there and you try to look perhaps a little beyond your scope. You want to make sure that you're getting all the different data points because, again, that's what we're trying to do, get data points. Obviously, any recommendations that we make as a group must be within the context of the charter unless this group decides to go back to council and ask for an expanse of the charter. That's point one. Point number two, James, I agree that whenever one makes a recommendation, they need to be aware of potential unintended consequences. So while I respect that there are some times in which a registrar may be protecting the interests of a registrant by holding it a week or two before deleting it because someone may have changed their mind, I think when we look at that aspect, one needs to look at the actions of that registrar. Are they profiting while they're, you know, graciously holding it for that registrant? Or is it, as I said, a page where it says, this is how you go and recover the name? That is why I think it's important to look at what that page says, to link that up with certain representations being made by some registrars saying we're looking out for the interest of the registrant as opposed to, hey, we're making an extra buck before this thing gets flipped or something like that. I think that's important, and I think that has to be part of our fact-finding.
Jeff, I think you're next.
Yes. I just want to say that I just really, really need to object to the statement that Mike just said that this is, I don't believe this is at all like litigation and this is not discovery. I mean, when did this become even close to a lawsuit or something along those lines? I mean, I thought this was just a working group to try and find out some facts. We're not expanding and looking at other areas. I mean, the whole thing is we've had so many issues with these working groups of people losing their focus and PDPs and other things going off into taking years. I think the idea is to focus here and just to say we're looking at post-expiration domain name recovery. How does it work for the registrant? I mean, Alan, it was the ALAC that came up with the issues. I'd like, try and stick to that. And I think that what the business model is, and until somebody says to me, hey, the business model makes a difference in the domain name recovery, I'm not sure what that has to do with it. But that at least we can go through these questions. I'm not sure how relevant they are, but I'd like to stay away from any thought that this is like litigation, this is discovery, and we have an obligation to go beyond the questions and beyond the focus here just to find facts. Just my personal opinion on this.
Okay. As Chair, I'll say I have no intention of allowing us to widen our scope. That is why I phrased the question of, do we define what Christina was saying as expiration, which would include it in our scope or not? If everyone said yes, it's definitely deemed to be expiration, the answer is simple. If everyone said no, it isn't, the answer is simple. If half and half, then we need to discuss it further at some point. So I don't think we need to worry at this point about our scoping enlarged. In terms of Michael's use of the word discovery, whether for good or bad, I'm not a lawyer, and I didn't read as much into it as you did.
And perhaps it was Mike Plage, perhaps it was a bad analogy.
Yeah.
What is frustrating here is the registrars have the data. We're trying to find data. And what happens is there may be certain bad registrars. There are good registrars that perhaps may be participating and will share their information. As was evidenced on last week's call when we were doing the fact-finding, much of GoDaddy's practices are spelled out, price points, time frames, all that stuff, to the, again, openness, transparency, and predictability to the registrants. Finding out for other people what goes on is what we need to do, and if we can't get that information, then perhaps one needs to throw a bigger net or do a little more rock turning to find out what is actually going on. Because the reason the ALAC submitted this in the first place was there was more than just anecdotal evidence of harm happening in the marketplace.
Okay. Jeff, did you still have your hand up, or are you...
Oh, no, sorry. I'll take that down.
Okay. James, next.
Yeah, real quickly, I had another an issue with a term I think that Mike mentioned, which was registrars profiting while they're holding a name. You know, I want to be careful that we're not using the word profit, you know, where we think it applies. What we're doing, and I'm speaking completely hypothetically because I don't even know if this is true of GoDaddy, so I'm certainly not speaking for other registrars, but what we're talking about is a situation, a process that's going to require an additional burden on a registrar that's going to take it out of its automated systems and make it more of a manual process. That's increased cost, and I think that if we want to say that the registrar's deriving revenue from while it holds that name, that's different. If it's a cost recovery operation, that's different than saying we are profiting off of holding of a name. And I just wanted to get that out there because...
Duly noted. I think we're finished with question number two. We have 24 minutes left, and I'd be nice if we can finish going through the list, but we'll see how far we get. Okay, question three. Are the terms of treatment of the domain name registration at the time of expiration contained in the registration agreement or other document? I'm sorry, I'm having trouble parsing this. Marika, can you help me here?
Yeah, it's basically just asking where the terms relating to expiration are contained, whether it's in the registration agreement or in another document, and it's asking whether to specify the terms.
Okay.
So we're saying
where are they stated, and is there anything we missed?
Yeah.
Okay. I see no hands up. I will continue. If the registrar makes substantial changes to the who is, and we define that essentially to the pointing to who the registrant is or pointing the DNS somewhere, is that practice dependent on whether the registry offers auto-renew or not? The general answer we got in last week's call is registrars do not differentiate, but we have chosen to leave the question in just to make sure that we have a consistent answer. Does the registrar or any affiliate offer any value-added service regarding the sale, auction, domain after their date of original expiration? If so, what are those services? Now, is this question still needed in light of the one of the bullets to question number one? Anyone like to either defend it or say take it out?
Alan, it's Jeff. I think that it would be gone because I'm still not even sure what that question is asking, but I think I understand the intent, and I think the other question covers it, but then I'm asking actually if you could expand on it because maybe I'm not sure of the intent of the question or what's really being asked here.
I think it was Michael's question originally, and I asked a similar question to yours at the last one. But at that point, we had not actually broken one into the targeted questions we have now. So, Michael, do you have any strong feelings at this point? Is Michael still with us?
Not be on mute.
Is he on meeting view? I don't have a copy of it right now.
He's still connected according to MeetingView, so maybe he's put his phone on mute.
He is on the call.
All right, maybe he stepped away. Let's come back to this one. If no one can defend why it's there, my inclination would be to take it out because I don't really know what it's covering other than what we're asking in the bullet of question one.
Yeah, elsewhere. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does the registrar or affiliate provide any revenue share opportunities in connection with revenue recognized? Well, this is in relation to the value-added services. So in other words, if it is sold, bartered, auctioned, does the registrant see any of that? Comments on this one? I have two hands up. James.
Sorry, slow mute button. I'm just getting, it's not really I'm going to stumble on this one a little bit, so I beg your patience for a moment, but it's not really a question necessarily about this particular question, but this whole series of questions is starting to give me the impression that rather than focusing on the milestones and the process involved in expiration, that we're starting to now put various aspects of a domain name aftermarket under a microscope. And while, you know, admittedly, I mean, I'm not so naive to think that that's not what's driving a lot of, you know, registrar and registrant activities in, you know, post-expiry, I'm just wondering, is that where we're going with this particular series of questions here, is that we want to really get a peek under the hood at how some of these various aftermarkets operate, or I guess I'm trying to find out where we're going to circle this back to the actual process and what REDS can do to ensure that they're protected against losing.
I only have one comment on that, and I'm not quite sure where we should go with this question, but one of the reasons it's there, I believe, is because when discussions have been held with registrars before, the registrars have been the one to bring it up, saying, you know, look how good we are, we're giving some of the money back to the original registrant. In other words, typically the issue has been raised by the registrars and not by someone else.
Hello, I'm sorry, I disconnected there for a moment. I apologize.
Do you want me to repeat what I just said?
I can't ask you to do that. I'm sorry. I'll have to read the transcript.
No. All I was saying is the issue of we share some of the money with the registrant has usually been brought up by the registrars, not by someone else, as a relevant part in the discussion of what the process is following.
Okay.
Jeff has his hand up.
Yeah, just a quick point is that I'm still – maybe some registrars had brought it up, but – I don't see it as, I'm not sure what the question has to do just going forward on helping out with this process. And I think just from a registrar point of view, I think that by removing these questions and taking them out, since they really don't have any relevance, it would also, this whole line of questioning about questioning on the business model and asking sort of like, as James said, to peek under the hood, it's going to put a lot of people off. And I'm not sure how it helps, so my suggestion would be to remove it. It would make a lot of people a lot happier, and I think maybe help with some of the cooperation, unless somebody really sees how sharing funds with a registrant explains the post-expiration domain name recovery process.
Just to be clear, do you feel that some of the previous questions have been poking under the hood and looking at business models, or is this the one we're talking about here?
No, I was saying this one, and I'm still not even sure the previous one, what that even meant.
Yeah, but that one said we
some
would
of the ones.
It.
No, the business model, when it says, when you say how many days until a domain, if it's auctioned, how many days, that's you know, each one is different, but that is sort of germane to this discussion. But is the revenue shared, how it's shared, those sorts of questions, I'm not sure how that's relevant.
Okay.
But the other ones, I think some of them are.
Is there anyone on this call who feels strongly we should maintain question 6 on revenue sharing? Jeff, is that a new hand or an old hand?
Oh, no, that is the hand that I was still talking. I am going to lower it now. I need to focus more on between the Adobe and the document.
I do it all the time. I understand. All of us need to be retrained. Or maybe the system needs to be retrained. Marika, let's in the next version put this one in square brackets or something as tentatively removed. Next question. Does the registrar or affiliate provide registrant prior to expiration the right to remove the name from the value-added service? In other words, can the registrar say under no conditions may you auction my name ahead of time? Auction as a synonym for any of the many things that might happen. I suspect the answer is going to be no for everyone, but I have no problem with asking the question, as long as we make it clear what we mean by value-added service.
Yeah, Alan.
Alan,
James. Yeah, we have a whole bunch of hands. James?
Just real quickly, and when we say that for essentially that prior to expiration, I think that needs to be highlighted or called out, because essentially that we're not saying that the registrar or the RAE can disposition what a registrar does or doesn't do with a name after they have ended their service contract. Is that correct?
Well, what we can say is one thing. This is, again, is information gathering. Is we're asking, are there any registrars that allow the registrant to say, when my domain dies, it dies? I think paraphrasing the question.
This is Plage. I'm not in Adobe, so just
okay.
Put
and,
my hand up.
We've been asking you a number of times, and you were gone.
Yeah, I had unfortunately had to do some billable day work there.
No excuse for that. Okay, you're in the line then. Paul is next.
Yeah, and I was just going to ask again, the clarification that you offered, let's get that into the question, because I'm left scratching my head what the value-added service offering is.
Okay.
If the question's getting at, don't let it go to auction explicitly, let's say that. Let's not leave any doubt. For those of us on the call, we're following along. We understand the back and forth and can kind of get an idea where people are coming from. But I think for most registrars, when they see this, when it goes out, a lot of them are going to be left scratching their heads, like, what are they asking for? What's this all about?
I believe, and Michael originated the words, and when he comes up, he can clarify, but I believe the expression value-added services is a code word for saying, can the name be made available to someone else under some financial circumstances and some business circumstances. Ron, you're next.
I would nominate 7 to be in square brackets along with 6, because I think they're related.
Okay, Michael, do you want us to bring you up to date, or were you listening when you were gone?
No, I had to step out of the I had to step out of the other room and go to another computer.
Okay, just to quickly summarize, we're running out of time, but to very quickly summarize, on number 5, does the registrar offer value-added services? The general feeling in the group was this is already now covered in the one of the bullets of question number 1. And we don't need this one as a separate question.
And as I said, I have faith in ICANN's staff in executing this questionnaire to gather the information that they need. So if registrars think it's duplicative, and if Marika thinks, or Marika or staff think that they can get the necessary information, I won't be a stick in the mud on that.
Okay.
With regard to service value-added service contract, you know, the language I was looking at here is somewhat, if you will, the funnel request, which registries have to go through for, if you will, a registry service. My question here, and James, I think you made a statement. What happens after the registrant's service contract has ended? And I think that's a very good point. And what I've been trying to hit on is what happens when that service contract ends. And what I see happening, and or what I'd like to hopefully see from the survey, is what do registrars do? Do registrars somehow insert themselves into that service contract to take over rights that were originally vested in the registrant? Because, again, remember, in order for a domain name to be maintained in a registry database, there needs to be a contract and there needs to be payment. There needs to be, I'm drawing the blank here, the reasonable expectations of payment. So how is that name residing in a registry database after that registrant service contract is ended? What are registrars doing? Are they interjecting themselves into that contract? That's my question. And hopefully this survey will elaborate on that, because I think that does go towards...
I believe,
yeah,
it's Alan, that by asking them what are the steps, including how who is this changed, which is the formal... I'm sorry, is someone trying to speak? There's... Okay. So I think we've addressed that question.
Excellent.
Okay. The next thing when you were gone was the on number 6 on revenue sharing. There was a question of how does this relate. It clearly is a part of the business model, but whether the registrar shares some money with the registrant or not does not really change the issue of ownership. And I must admit I tend to agree.
The reason I was getting into, and again, this goes to whether it's an auction or not, and depending, again, I know we're trying not to talk about price, but I do believe in certain business models employed by certain registrars, a registrant who wants to recover his name after a certain point in time has no other alternative but to bid in that auction to perhaps get it at a lower price point than what they would have to pay at full market value. Because remember how certain registrants can recover? So let's just suppose the recovery point is $80. That registrant now is forced, one would say forced, but is finding himself in an auction to try to get the name for less than $80.
Michael, if I can interrupt, I believe we're addressing that question later on.
Okay.
The question of proceeds of are the proceeds of the sale shared may change the net price that registrant is paying, but doesn't really change the concept.
I guess what happens is what's wrong with just asking the question? What's the harm?
Explain to me the
harm.
The statement was made that the more we ask about business models which are not directly related to the process, the less likely registrars are to cooperate and provide answers to all of the rest of the questions, if I may rephrase what either Jeff or James said.
I think that's pretty lame. I mean, they're either going to answer the question or not. And one would suspect that this should be on the website anyway as part of what happens with their domain name.
It may well be, but the question is, what are we going to do with the information one way or another? How will it change what our outcomes are? Whether there is revenue sharing or not, or whether it's 1% or 99%.
Well, isn't one of the potential outcomes of this best practice recommendations? So if we see that a group of responsible registrars are sharing in that revenue to the benefit of the original registrant whose service contract allowed this auction to take place in the first place, that's not such a bad thing, is it?
Okay.
Wait a second. We're saying now that it is possible for ICANN to issue a recommendation on what registrars should do with revenue?
What I'm saying is, let's stop there for a minute, James, and let's talk at what ICANN is. When some of the registries wanted to auction off single letter names, ICANN talked about what they should be doing with some of their revenues. So let's have that discussion. We can go back and look at that. Perhaps. We should.
Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that comparing what the registry contracts and how it works with ICANN and saying ICANN does it to registry, so let's do it to registrars. I mean, we'll talk about let's keep focus. Like, that is just a wormhole. It's not even close. Those people.
It's a
different contract. And if you want to fight that battle, Mike, and say, hey, I think ICANN should discuss how registrars, what they do with their revenue, I mean, that's a discussion I don't even think it's worth bringing up, but do you really think it's relevant in comparing registrars in a competitive environment to registries?
Jeff, no, and this is where I strenuously disagree with you. This is not a competitive environment. The registrar of record is holding that domain name and determining how it's allocated. It is acting like a registry. That registrar of record in holding post-expiration auctions is providing a registry service. So, yes, I think this is within the bounds, and, yes, I am going to go there.
Okay,
and will not back down.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to withdraw my hand on that one.
Okay. May I suggest we continue this on the list? I'd like to see some substantive discussion so we can try to find out not only who speaks last or who speaks loudest, but what the general feeling is of the group as a whole. Does anyone remember where we are? Okay, number seven was, does the registrar or affiliate provide the registrant the right to say, do not do anything with my name after expiration? Michael, I think I'm paraphrasing you correctly.
Fine.
Does anyone have any objection to asking that question? I'm going to be very surprised if anyone allows the registrant to say that, but does anyone have a problem with it?
Well, yeah, this is Ron. Yeah, I think from Focus, even though I'm on the side of registrant's rights, I just don't see this as being in the purview of what we're doing.
Well, I would disagree because this says, does the, you know, if we know that Registrar X has a certain process, which might include auctioning off the domain name partway through the expiration process, we're asking the question is, does the registrant prior to expiration have a way of controlling that and saying, use process X, not process Y?
But I'm suggesting
so I think
that if it matters to a registrant, then they choose a different registrar, rather than impose a set of check boxes that the average person won't understand anyway.
Anyone else have strong feelings? I said I'd put a fair bet on the fact that we know what the answer is going to be on virtually all cases. So I'm not sure I see the need for the question, but I don't see the harm either.
Ask it.
Okay, we go ahead and leave it there for the next discussion. Number eight, does the registrar or affiliate provide the registrant the ability to renew re-register domain name once it has entered the auction period or completion of the auction process? If so, tell us about it. Any problem with that? I think that's relevant because we are likely to find out that domain names do enter a sale or auction process somewhere along the way, and the question is that an irrevocable date where it's too late unless the original registrant participates as a buyer, assuming they know how to do that and have the mechanism to do it. So I'm happy with that. Siva, you have your hand up. And I note we have 2 minutes left in this call. Siva, are you there?
Unmute, Siva.
Okay, let's go on. Question number nine was for registrars.
Yes,
or there?
I'm here, Siva.
Okay.
I just wanted to agree with the proposed question. I feel very strongly that the question should be included.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, the next question is for registrars that have some, that provide auction services, and again, auction I think is a generic term there to making it available. What number of registrants have exercised that right? Second, does this parse properly? Provide auction services. Okay, I think what this is asking, it's not clear, is for the ones in question 8 who allow the registrant to get back in after the auction has started, what number of registrants have exercised that right? I think that's a fair question. I'm not sure it's worded very well, but I think the intent is fine. The question 10 is, what percentage of overall GTLDs does the registrar own? In other words, what percentage of the market are they controlling? And we said we would only use this number in a global presentation, not attributed to any particular registrar. And lastly, we have a question of, is the registrar responding on behalf of one or a family?
Yep, fair enough.
Now, I suspect some of these questions can now be, once we've accepted the format of question number one, I suspect some of these other questions can be wrapped into that as bullets within it. And unless anyone objects on the next pass, we will try to do that to make it, a little bit clearer what we're asking. Our time is up. Some of us have another call starting now. Unless there's any objection, we will send out a revised version in the next couple of days, and we meet again next Tuesday, hopefully with full attendance that time.
Thanks, Alan. Bye.
Okay.
Thanks. Alan, bye, guys.
Bye.
One question.
Bye.
Alan?
Yeah, I'm here.
No, I just wanted to ask you, do you already want me to update the survey with the comments that were made now and the changes made and already pose that to it for those that weren't here?
What?
Or wait till the next call so we do everything in one go?
No, I think we should do a revision. Why don't you do a first pass at it, then I will, and I'll get it back to you quicker than I did last time.
Okay.
Okay?
No problem. All right.
Thank
Bye.
You, Marika.